Good morning. You're listening to 3CR. We're back and we're going to interview David Currley, who is Melbourne Uni's Professor Emeritus. And David is also a member of the Climate Council of Australia. Good morning, David. How are you?
Good morning. I am very well, and it's a lovely sunny morning in Melbourne.
Oh, is it? I got up in the dark, so I don't know.
Yeah, I haven't actually looked at what's outside in the sky yet.
Okay, so at present we have had a deadly and devastating floods from the Hunter to the mid-north coast in New South Wales. At the same time, we have very dry conditions, in fact, drought in South Australia, Victoria, Tasmania and Western Australia. Are you surprised?
Not really surprised at all by the sorts of extreme weather events that you're talking about. Yes, absolutely, drought in southwest of Western Australia, across much of Southern Australia, as well as very high rainfall in the wet season in much of Northern Australia, as well as the floods that you talked about in the New South Wales, Central Coast region and Northern New South Wales. Those are exactly what we've been seeing over the last 20 and 30 years, long-term drying trends across Southern Australia, as well as increases in rainfall in Northern Australia over the last 20, 30, 40 years. And that is primarily due to what we expect from the impacts of climate change due to increases in greenhouse gases in the atmosphere, increases in climate pollution from burning fossil fuels, not only in Australia, but around the world.
Yeah, and thanks for that, David. And I guess the kind of next kind of question is, you know, where are we kind of globally? And I guess what does that kind of mean for Australia?
Yeah, look, that's a really important question. And 2024, the year completed 6 months ago, was the first time that global average temperatures had exceeded the 1.5 degrees Celsius, level relative to pre-industrial temperatures. And that level was set as almost like a landmark or a barrier. It wasn't really a barrier, but basically a marker that the Paris Agreement, which was reached in 2015 across all countries in the world, were trying to achieve, trying to limit global warming to less than 1.5 degrees Celsius. And unfortunately, 2024 was the first year that global average temperatures had exceeded that for a one-year period. Now, 1.5 degrees Celsius warming for 1 year does not mean that the Paris Agreement target has been broken. That target is really for climate variations or global warming for a 20-year period. But we do know now that what it means is that for the next 20 years, essentially from 2023 till 2042 or something like that, we are almost certain for the next 20 years to exceed this 1.5 degrees Celsius average temperature. Being it for 1 year only, if the temperatures were to cool, would mean that we haven't broken the Paris Agreement. But we need to see what happens over the next 20 years, and we do know that that exceeding 1.5 degrees Celsius is locked in pretty well because human-caused greenhouse gas emissions from burning fossil fuels, from agriculture, from transport, have also set new record high levels in 2024, and the, if you like, the commitments from countries to limit their emissions of greenhouse gases hasn't occurred. We've now got the highest levels of carbon dioxide, methane, nitrous oxide, other long-lived greenhouse gases in the atmosphere, and now at record high levels, and their emissions are growing because countries are still increasing their emissions of carbon dioxide, methane and nitrous oxide from all of these activities around the world. We need to transition to a zero carbon economy if we're going to limit global warming.
Yeah, and despite those alarming or that alarming description, the federal government has just in late May approved the continuation of Australia's largest gas project, the Woodside North West Shelf project. Critics, including many scientists, have described this as a climate bomb and that it's going to lead to higher emissions and threaten Australia's climate commitments. Do you agree with this assessment, and what do you think about the approval for Woodside?
Look, your description is very accurate. I don't quite know what a climate bomb is, but I do know that the, if you like, the announcement by the Minister for the Environment, Murray Watt, in May, as well as the support for those activities by the recently elected federal government, is entirely inconsistent. First of all, with Australia's commitments to achieve net zero emissions of fossil fuels by 2050, but they've just, at the North West Shelf, extended or approved the extension of activities right out to 2070, approving or appearing to approve, subject to a few constraints, the emissions of greenhouse gases from the Woodside project on North West Shelf, as well as approving multiple new projects that will lead to increased extraction of coal and increased extraction of fossil gas from other projects around Australia. What that means is, although not all that gas and coal will be used in Australia, Australia's exporting fossil fuels to countries around the world. Companies are making massive profits from selling that coal overseas, and that is double Australia's domestic emissions when that coal and fossil gas is sold and used in other countries. It is twice as big as Australia's domestic emissions. It is crazy. It is cognitive dissonance when the government says that it wants to address climate change while approving these new fossil fuel extraction projects to sell overseas. Australia appears to want to, or should I say, the Australian government appears to want to have its cake in terms of fossil fuels extraction, wants to eat that cake and then sell it overseas, making climate change worse for everyone in Australia, making climate change worse for everyone and all ecosystems around the world, while appearing to say it wants to address climate change as well, which it clearly does not want to do at the level that's needed to limit global warming to 1.5 degrees.
Yeah, so I think in talking about this, can you talk about how can Australia reduce its carbon emissions? What are kind of the next steps to effectively address the climate emergency, and what are our energy and adaptation options?
Golly, that's a really short question with lots of long and complicated answers, and I'll try to answer it briefly. Look, what we do know is that we have to transition away from using coal and gas as a transition to get away from using fossil fuels for producing our electricity, as well as moving away from using fossil fuels for our transport systems, for our energy systems in many companies. What we need to do is transition to a renewable energy economy, which is making use of our renewable electricity solutions like solar power and wind power, and we need to rapidly transition to these sorts of renewable energy systems. And there has been already over the last 20 years. It's not that we want to start stuff. We want to continue the expansion of solar power and wind power systems all around Australia, because Australia is blessed by more opportunities for generating electricity and using electricity from renewable systems, from solar power and wind power, than any other country in the world. And so, look, there's plenty of opportunities. We need to continue this transition that's already underway, but we need to do it in a way that doesn't damage natural ecosystems. While we're doing it, we need new electricity grid, new power lines. We need to take advantage of all of the opportunities for also reducing our energy use, because the biggest way to save money in people's homes as well as in businesses is to reduce our use of energy. We need to have much more energy efficient systems in our homes, and that means to think always about how we can reduce our energy use in cars, in electric appliances, and having better insulation in winter and in summer to reduce our heating requirements in winter and our cooling requirements in summer.
So there's so much that a government, if it took this issue of the climate emergency seriously, could be doing. Like instead of building more freeways, for example, the North East Link near where I live, and building public transport, and as you said, expansion of renewable energy rather than continuing with coal and gas. What do you think as a scientist and as a citizen, seeing that the government is doing the exact opposite of really what they should be doing?
Look, what I think is that the best way that I can address this is by trying to do the things that I'm doing now, trying to get involved in public communication about why this is a really urgent issue, why Australia's current targets for emission reductions are much too slow for a fair contribution globally for Australia's share of reducing emissions, because Australia and Australia's population has the largest per capita emissions of greenhouse gases per person currently for any developed country in the world. Australia has higher emissions per person than the United States does, higher emissions per person than other developing countries like China, Korea, and India. And yet many people say, well, we shouldn't do anything because other countries with much, much bigger populations than Australia need to act first because they're bigger total emissions. But actually, Australia's export of fossil fuels makes Australia the third largest contributor to global warming in terms of its export of fossil fuels, of coal and fossil gas. Australia's the third largest exporter, and those exports, and when they're burnt, are double Australia's domestic emissions. But look, Australia's domestic emissions are still critically important, and much more needs to be done to reduce them more rapidly and to achieve a net zero emissions reduction target, to achieve those net zero emissions much faster than what we have 2050 at present. We need to make sure, if at all possible, that that happens in 10 years. And there are ways that the Climate Council has demonstrated can be achieved within 10 years to reduce, to achieve net zero emissions by 2035. And that would be a much fairer contribution for reducing Australia's very large per-person emissions, the largest of any developed country in the world.
Yeah. I personally think that we need a mass climate movement that's highly visible, organising activities like demos, public meetings, school strikes and so on to put pressure on our politicians. I find it a bit depressing that the climate movement is virtually inactive. We need the scientists like yourself to speak out, but of course you need us to back you up with actions and make it safe for you to speak out. Do you wish to comment on what I've just said?
Well, look, I agree with some of the things that you're saying, and yes, it appears that there is limited activity, but actually much of the limited, if you like, activity is in the national and state-based media sources, because, if you like, addressing climate change is no longer news. It's sort of old news, and it's hard to get new stories out about the need for greater action to address climate change. Extinction Rebellion has been trying to do that for years, but one of the issues that's also really important, you asked why climate scientists aren't getting more involved in some of these actions and speaking out publicly about the need for action. Well, actually, many climate scientists like myself are very active in talking about the urgency for action to reduce greenhouse gas emissions and the imminent problems or the current problems due to climate extremes that we talked about earlier, the flooding in northern Australia, the bushfires and extreme temperatures in 2019 and 2020. But actually, the largest number of climate scientists in Australia are employed in CSIRO and the Bureau of Meteorology, and they're not allowed to speak out about climate change and get involved in public action without approval by their bosses. And they can't speak out about the problems or the limits to government action and why the government appears to be wanting to increase climate pollution, not only in Australia, but around the world. So this issues with government policy, the issues about too slow action in Australia, employees in CSIRO and employees in the Bureau of Meteorology are not allowed to speak out against current government policy or they would lose their jobs. And that's obviously a disincentive for many people employed in Bureau of Meteorology and CSIRO.
Yeah, absolutely. So I want to thank you for speaking out and also the Climate Council of Australia. We'll have to wrap up now, but do you have any final comments you'd like to make before we do finish up?
Look, I think it's really important. I've talked about 1.5 degrees of global warming, but many people are not aware that Australian average temperature increases much faster than the global average temperature, because Australia is a landmass. And when we talk about Australian average temperature, we're talking about temperatures averaged over the land. There are much higher rates of warming in Australia than globally. So when we get to 1.5 degrees for a 20-year period, the Australian average warming will be more than 2 degrees for 1.5 degrees of warming globally. And when we get to 2 degrees of global warming, the average warming across Australia will be more like 3 degrees or more. Mm. And that is pretty well locked in unless we rapidly reduce our emissions. 3 degrees of global warming, 2 degrees of global warming, 3 degrees of warming across Australia is going to mean increases in hot extremes, increases in bushfires, increases in extreme rainfall, in thunderstorms and events that have caused some of this flooding in northern New South Wales. It is going to make the impacts of climate extremes much worse. And the biggest problem is that Australia, which has a climate risk assessment waiting to be released, the federal government decided not to release it until after the election. Mm. Well, the election's passed now, but we still haven't got the climate risk assessment. We don't have a national climate adaptation plan. It's due to be released last year. And again, it was held back because it hasn't been completed or released yet. So there are so many things that we need the current government and state governments to do, but they've all been delayed for a whole range of reasons that we need Tony Albanese and Murray Watt to tell us what is going on, because it's unclear why this information is being hidden from Australia's public.